Santa is in the studio tonight as the boneheads take their lumps of coal and the good guys get their presents.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 270 for December 19 of 2014. Ho, ho, ho! Who's been naughty and who's been nice? Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Well, ho, 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 Gary.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Almost. Christmas. Almost, right.
Almost, yeah.
You got kind of a red Christmas
my
vest.
My candy cane look. I was working for that.
Your striped red shirt.
To get into the season four tonight's show.
Well, and we got to explain what tonight's show is all about, but let's introduce our other two guests here. We got Mark Phelan from the Detroit Free Press, car critic there. Mark, great having you here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And Aaron Bragman from Cars.com.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me here.
Great having you here. So, Gary, explain what we're doing.
Well, being the Christmas season, we have asked each of us to think about who in the auto industry we'd like to give presents to and who we would like to give coal to. Who's been naughty and who's been nice. And as our viewers may recall, these two guys were on the automotive draft this year. And so their observations, I'm confident, will be just the present. This will be the topping on the cake, all kinds of metaphors here for the show this year. So.
So coal is the naughty part, right? So you're not sponsored by the state of Kentucky or something like that,
no.
Where coal is a good thing. You get coal and you get coal. Everyone gets coal.
Of course, the state of West Virginia would probably take exception to the way we're looking at this.
But you're gonna get letters.
But we're going to go through different rounds.
That's right. So each of us will talk about who we would get a present to, and we'll chime in with our own observations on observations, and so we'll work this through, and then we'll actually have people who are viewers of the show. We'll have some of their observations worked in here too. So it's been an exciting year. So I think we should start right away with Mark.
Mr. Mark Phelan.
Thank you very much. And my first present goes to Mary Barra, because I think the GM's chairman set an example of transparency and accountability that the whole industry should follow in how she handled the ignition switch crisis. I mean, she gave an independent... Merry Christmas, Mary. She gave an independent investigator carte blanche. And there have been a number of other investigations yet, and nobody has come up with any place where they can say he sugarcoated it, he took it easy on him. It looks like GM really did take it seriously. They knew this was the kind of thing that could devastate a company for generations. Mm-hmm. They took it seriously. I think they did it right.
I was going to give her a present, too. For a slightly different reason. Okay, here's a woman who started at General Motors in 1980. As a co-op student when she was going to GMI, okay? So she's worked at General Motors all of these years. She's worked in many engineering functions. She's had product development jobs. She's done all sorts of things. So finally, on January 14th, 2014, she gets named CEO. She gets the golden ring, not a brass ring, a golden ring. Then it's almost as though she grabs it and then finds out she's allergic to gold. I mean, it's just like everything goes bad because you think about it. Here she is. In April, having to testify in front of Congress. Then in June, she's back testifying again. So here's
she gave Saturday Night Live some of their best material of the whole year.
A culmination of all of this hard work and, the first woman CEO of General Motors and one of the few women CEOs of any major corporation in the United States. And then it just all comes tumbling down on her. And then,
but I mean, a good measure as to whether or not it's been successful and how she's handled it has been General Motors sales. There hasn't been even so much as a blip in terms of impact from all of these recalls on GM sales. They're still going extremely well, very strong. The public doesn't seem to care. In fact, anybody bringing their car in for the recall is usually getting a visit from the sales guy saying, you know, we could fix this, but I know this is like 6-7 years old. Maybe you'd like a new cruise. Wouldn't that be something we could put you in? Here's how much it'll cost. And it's been working. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Mary Barra has done pretty good. So good choice there, Mark. So, Aaron, you're next up. Who would you give a present to?
Well, it might seem a little unusual, but, you know, we're having record low gas prices right now. When you adjust for purchasing power and inflation and whatnot, right now there's some seriously low fuel prices. So I'm giving my present to OPEC, the cartel of oil-producing states. For a couple of reasons. One, they're trying to basically end the domestic fracking industry here in the United States. And that is such a dirty, nasty industry, far more than people actually realize. So
I totally disagree. You're totally wrong on that. But we'll get into that in a moment. Continue, sir.
I think that is a dirty industry. And plus, it is stimulating truck and SUV sales like nothing has over the last several years. So it's a 1-2 punch, I think, that's really been a benefit that I think we can directly attribute to our friends who are producing fossil fuels.
But I love the conspiracy theorists because they've got two diametrically opposed theories.
Yes.
I mean, one is the one you just espoused, that OPEC is trying to kill the U.S. oil industry. Mm-hmm. The other is that OPEC and the U.S. are in cahoots to kill the Iranian and Russian
and Venezuela
economies. So, I mean, what do you believe, or do you
Venezuela
pay less for gas and enjoy? And Venezuela.
Venezuela's part of OPEC.
Yes, and they're the ones complaining.
So OPEC wouldn't be.
The prices are so low, their revenue.
Yeah, look, we wouldn't have cheap gas prices without the fracking. I find it very interesting that the Obama EPA has not shut down one well.
Really?
Not one.
Well.
Not one. You take out that 3.5 million extra barrels per day that we're producing, and oil goes back over $100 a barrel. We're at the mercy of the Middle East.
So the president
and we take away this great economic stimulus that is helping people who need that the most now, working class America.
And increasing U.S. manufacturing in a way that looks like it could last for a long time. And let's hear it for government research, which figured out how to do all of this fracking in the first place.
I agree. And the other thing, too, is remember, OPEC is a cartel. Cartels collude to control supply and prices. Cartels are illegal in all of the developed world. So I say this is our chance to finally shove it to OPEC once and for all and get off their oil.
We're shoving a present at them.
So the president should actually go to the domestic fracking industry is what you're saying and not actually OPEC.
Hey, look, fracking, if it's done properly, and it's interesting to see that organizations such as the National Defense Research, Defense Council and Exxon have gotten together to say, look, the National Defense NRDC, thank you very much, have said, we don't like fracking, but if you guys do it this way, we can live with it. And Exxon has said, look, we don't want any regulation, but if that's the regulation, we can live with it. I say, let's get going, because this is going to help a lot of things, and especially at the natural gas part of it. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about a very fast reduction in CO2 emissions, doesn't get rid of them, I admit, that's for further down in the century. But right now, I think it's an amazing thing, and I'd give a present to the frackers, not to OPEC.
Well, you and OPEC.
That's not your turn. It's not your turn. It's not your turn.
Feeding
illegal. Okay, speaking of oil prices, I want to give a present to Mercedes for bringing back the Maybach.
Okay, this, brother.
Okay, so it's the Mercedes Maybach, 18 feet long. Okay, sumptuous, beautiful, and to the point of the present to OPEC. It's got a 6-liter engine, 523 horsepower, twin turbo V12. Come on. All right. It's like a Learjet in terms of luxury in its appointments. I mean,
you
it's
see
got
that,
tables.
Ben just had the logo up, the MM for the Maybach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There it is.
I think they just had boxes and boxes of those logos.
Just left
and they
over.
Couldn't close the brand down, and throw those boxes away.
Oh, come on. See, but we got to keep another thing in mind is that they didn't introduce this car in Germany. They didn't introduce this car in Los Angeles. They introduced the car at Auto Wangzhou in China.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously,
we know who it's for.
The 1% in China needs to have something to roll in, and you've pointed out that oil prices are very low. So It's just fortuitous all around.
And you know what's interesting, though? The press car I actually have this week is a Bentley Flying Spur. And for probably a little bit less money, you'll be able to get one of these Mercedes Maybachs. And the things that the Spur is missing are all of the technology that Mercedes has in the current S-Class, some of the comfort, some of the room, some of the space. And I'm sitting in this thing going, I mean, it's beautifully crafted and looks really wonderful, but I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I don't wonder if I wouldn't rather have a really, really nice S-Class like a Maybach and see how that thing compares. I bet there's going to be a lot of people that think that.
You know, because
doesn't that kind of beg the question, though? I mean, Mercedes, they are the ultimate luxury brand. They invented the car. They've been doing it for longer than anybody else. Why do they keep devaluing their own brand by saying Maybach is a little bit better? I mean, it failed last time. It's not like there were people, you know, marching in the streets or in the aisles of Cartier saying, where's my Maybach? Why did the name need to come back?
You spend a lot of time in Cartier? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I was shopping for you.
Well, see, I sort of look at it as if you buy an S, you know, base S class, it's only $94,000. There are a lot of people who need to spend more money than that on cars. And, you know, and for some people, the hot stone massage in the rear seat just doesn't make it. You need a little bit more. So, I mean, you know, you just like acres of Napa leather rather than just, you know, I don't know, feet. So I think he's very clever. I think that they've hit it at a propitious time, and that's
and
why.
And all those new oil millionaires in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
But those saw fewer in Russia due to what we were talking about before.
At the moment, yeah. The ruble.
All right. So enough about that, John. What's your present go to?
Well, my present goes to what I think is the visually the coolest thing I've seen all year long, automotive related, and that's this crash video that Honda came out with. They've worked with a company called RTT, which is now owned by Dassault Systèmes. And they have this crash into an invisible wall. I mean, it's all simulated on computer and all that, right? But it is so realistic. I don't know if... Here we go. Up.
Kaboom. Wow, it smashed right into the... Oh, yeah, there we go. That present. Nice. Man.
I just do this on the TLX commercials. You actually see it.
Yeah, now they got the wall in that one, but I like the invisible
like it's
wall.
It's crashing into the present box.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was awesome.
So we should probably explain, though, that even though this looks like it would be an animation just for things like commercials, that it is actually an engineering tool. Mm-hmm. And so what they're doing is they're crash testing the vehicles. And so that's all predicated on underlying math data that doesn't look so pretty like those cars do.
I guess the grill looks better now, actually, after they do that.
So they're able to make a determination of where they need to strengthen the body. And then, as some viewers will recall, we had the MDX in here, the body in white, with that ring that...
For the small overlap crash test.
And all of the... So now that they're using this technology, which is sort of putting them ahead of other auto manufacturers in terms of being able to do that.
So realistic.
It is. Look at that.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my present. I just think visually that's one of the coolest things I've seen all year. And then we've got a present coming in from one of our viewers.
And Chuck Grency from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, starts off our special viewer participation in Presents and Coal by offering a present to the Ford Motor Company for trailblazing the all-aluminum pickup truck and risking its market share leadership position in the full-size truck segment.
And that was Chip Drake, our producer here, reading what Chuck Grency, a longtime viewer, had to say. And yeah, I kudos to Ford. That was a big roll of the dice for them.
It is, but the jury is still out as to whether or not this was the right thing to do, or whether it's successful or not. There's still a lot of debate internally among a lot of the automotive media as to whether or not this is going to be a big thing. I mean, it's definitely a big thing in terms of investment, in terms of the impact that's going to have, either from the insurance rates on it and repairs. The average, ordinary Joe buying an F-150, I don't think he's going to notice much in terms of difference. It's
but
still
I
an
think
F-150.
That's the brilliance of it.
And that's what they wanted to go for. That's exactly what Ford is trying to sell.
Nobody has ever made a dollar betting against Ford's ability to sell F-150.
Right.
And they've got something that delivers everything that people expected before and a little bit more, and will save them a little bit money in terms of fuel. I think that there's some backlash because people expected fuel economy numbers that were just outrageously good, and we could talk for a long time about whether the numbers they actually got are as good as, you know, that they should be. But the truck itself, you know, I think it checked off every box they needed it to.
Well, the ride and handling, I think, is improved by the lightening from the aluminum. But I think the more interesting point about what they've done is that whether this is highly successful or not as successful, I think that they've basically moved the ball down the field a bit from the point of view of saying, okay, we're going to introduce new technology into an industry that has pretty much been a steel-intensive technology where basically, you know, you're stamping and welding, and that's all you're doing. And I think what this does is it opens up the opportunity for other OEMs to start thinking about, okay, do we use aluminum? Perhaps we can find some less expensive composites, that you begin to have a greater mixture in terms of what cars become. And so, I mean, I'd give them full marks for saying, hey, let's try something different. And, you know, let's try something new.
Well, the key is, look, everyone's going to have to lightweight at some point. This isn't the end of improving fuel economy on pickup trucks. In fact, it's not until after 2017 that the standards really crank up. And I think you'll see Ford following at some point what Chrysler's done, or Ram, I guess I got to say. You know, they're going to go, Ram right now has an 8-speed automatic. Ford's going to go to a 10-speed. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting what GM has done with direct injection, cylinder deactivation, those sort of things.
We're about to see a new Titan diesel as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Ford bit the bullet first, jumped way out in front of everybody. They've tied up aluminum supplies for the next 3 years in this business in North America. So, yeah, you got to admire the engineering effort that they undertook. It was massive. And maybe the numbers aren't quite there, but the story's not over, as I said.
And you said we could talk for a long time, and unbeknownst to the viewers before the show, we talked for a long time.
Okay, well, this round wraps up round one, where we're giving out presents. And it's time to transition into round two, and Aaron, you're first on the list.
Okay, you're giving coal now.
I'm giving coal now, which is a bad thing, despite, you know, the West Virginians and Kentuckians. I'm giving this lump of coal to the United States government for maintaining this chicken tax thing that keeps going on. It is preventing us from getting small, cheap...
That was the piece of coal.
Yeah. Wow.
Small, cheap, truly efficient pickup trucks.
It was Joe Manchin from West Virginia throwing it at you.
Yeah, probably throwing it at the screen, exactly. We don't get a lot of the really cool small utility vehicles here that we could be getting. We're starting to see in 2015 a bunch of new mid-sized compact pickup trucks. I wouldn't call them compacts anymore. They're not compacts. They're as large as the Silverados were 10 years ago. But from Chevrolet, the Colorado, the Canyon, and the new Tacoma is coming. We're going to see a new Frontier later this year. But to actually get something that would be really unique, really less expensive, something in the teens instead of the 20s and 30s, it has to be imported. It could not be developed or built here or potentially maybe Mexico.
All right, Aaron, explain to some of the people who don't know what the chicken tax is.
The chicken tax was enacted by, I believe it's a trade dispute with Europe, where American exported chicken was suddenly flooding the market and it was ruining European chicken farmers' livelihoods. And in response, the Europeans or some of the other ones actually had instituted a tariff on incoming chicken. In response, the American government taxed a bunch of different things. One of them was imported pickup trucks.
Of which none existed at the time.
Exactly. But they were worried that there might be.
I was afraid that French dominance in small pickups was just around the corner.
Well, actually, I thought it was Volkswagen that they were worried about and bringing in a small Volkswagen pickup truck at the time. It's one of the few laws that remains on the books that really doesn't need to be here anymore, I think. I think it should go away. I honestly do.
But wasn't there a number of car companies that cleverly went around it?
To this day.
The Transit Connect, when it was originally brought, I don't think they do this anymore, but Transit Connect was built in Turkey and imported with seats in the back. So now it's not a pickup truck. It's not a utility vehicle necessarily. It's a passenger vehicle. They brought them in. They take the seats out, and now you could have a cargo van version.
So John and I were just driving yesterday
The Fiat Doblò, a.k.a. the Ram ProMaster City.
Right, which is built in Turkey. And
goes through a processing center here in the U.S.
In Baltimore. And
they take the seats out there?
But it does come with seats. You can get a wagon version of it. But apparently what happens in order to get the cargo version, that they literally take the seats out and, in effect, throw them away. I mean...
Yeah, that's what they did with the first generation.
They recycle them. It's more to ship them back and reuse them in the plant than to just strip them and recycle them here.
My favorite story of the way around the chicken tax was, remember when Subaru brought the Brat to the U.S. market?
They put those seats in the
back. Yeah. Little pickup truck. They put two seats in the back.
Rearward facing
with, you know, a pistol grip kind of handle. Yeah.
It looked like fun.
Oh, it was dangerous as hell. But they got around the 25%
roll bar.
It'd be like an amusement park ride. Woo!
But doesn't all this beg the question, do Americans want small pickup trucks?
I mean, no. There aren't any.
That's a good question. I feel like the market seems to have kind of run away from them.
I'm not convinced the midsize. Aaron's point, it would be so small volume, you couldn't tool it up just for the American market.
Right.
It has to be a global truck.
It would be an
And
import.
If you pulled that 25% chicken tax off, you would see a bunch of these small trucks. Yeah. Hit the American
market. Hyundai would probably bring something up without a problem. Even General Motors has these things that are built on Opel Astra platforms that they build in Brazil, which would be a really neat thing to have here if it met craft standards.
But the question then becomes, I mean, let's face it, for whether it's an F-150 or a Silverado or a Ram 1500, I mean, these guys are getting very good margins on these things. Mm-hmm. What kind of margins they can make on these little pickup trucks?
Probably not as much.
But you
wouldn't see necessarily the domestic producers doing this. You could have companies that don't have any kind of utility vehicle doing it, Hyundai, Kia, Volkswagen even. You could bring the Amarok.
Let's say you're a Hyundai dealer, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody's coming in and they want to buy one of these little things. I mean, wouldn't you rather try to upsell them on, an SUV?
An Equus.
A Tucson.
You could try.
I mean, I'm going to upsell. Yeah.
But actually, they'd be looking at the Mercedes Maybach.
There you go. With it. Okay, Gary, your choice of coal.
All right, I want to give a coal. Super Bowl 49 is coming. Okay, that'll be the next Super Bowl. It's actually, I had to look it up. I didn't understand what 49 was. It's XLIX. So just for those of you who are keeping score at home, that's 49. Okay, for years and years and years, for the last several years, let's be fair, Volkswagen has been doing some brilliant advertising on the Super Bowl. Okay, I mean, who can you know, forget the little kid, you know, the Darth Vader thing with his helmet on, and you know, they've been doing sensational stuff, but they've announced that they're not going to be having an ad at the Super Bowl this year. So, I mean, this leads me to believe that, you know, we'll look at Dalmatians and Clydesdales and,
well,
you know, we'll be,
pay for the CAW,
we'll be crying, we'll be sitting there looking at that. It's so sad. But then I started thinking about this a little more, and it occurs to me that you know, if we look at what Volkswagen sales have been, and I think somebody, maybe you called them sales-proof at one point, but that... Okay, they're getting better in terms of their sales. Their sales in November started picking up, and Golf Family became the Motor Trend Car of the Year.
It's won a few awards.
The North American Car and Truck of the Year Awards has named the Golf a finalist.
Right.
So I have a feeling that you know, Volkswagen is beginning to gain some traction, Super Bowl notwithstanding, but for those people who just watch the Super Bowl to see the commercials, they're not going to be so happy, so I give them a call.
Very interesting.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. I approve.
Mark?
I got no argument. I mean, sure. I liked the little baby Darth Vader.
Yeah,
that's great.
The dog one was cool. Didn't they do a dog one recently, too?
The unfit dog.
The dog couldn't jump into something. Yeah.
All right, John, what's your coal?
Well, I'm giving two lumps of coal, actually, in this time. To Takata, but also to the deputy administrator of NHTSA, David Friedman. So let me start with Takata. You know, they've caused this massive disruption to the global automotive industry, especially here in the U.S., though. They've got these defective airbags. They knew they had a problem, and so it would seem. They knew they had a problem, and looks like they didn't act on it. That's what they're going to get nailed on, not the fact that they had a defect. But it sure looks like, at least as reported by the New York Times, that they were conducting tests and told all their engineers to destroy the tests and not tell anybody about it.
And that goes back to 2004.
Right. So it's been around.
A lot of cars have these.
But everybody's trying to find out what the defect is. No one can find out. No one knows what the root cause is. In fact, as you guys know, last weekend, 10 different car companies all got together at Detroit Airport to have a big meeting. I think it was like a four-hour one to brainstorm and trade notes and find out what's the root cause of the problem. Nobody can find it. So what does NHTSA do? David Friedman says you have to issue a national recall, even though, A, we don't know what's really causing the problem, and B, we don't have good airbags that we can put in place to replace these things.
Yeah.
So there's only three airbag manufacturers in the world, Takata, Autoliv, and TRW. And guess what? The bags are so different technologically in size. You can't pull out the Takata ones and dump in a TRW one, for example. So why the hell is this government, you know, agency running around demanding a national recall right now? To me, they deserve a lump of coal.
But we do get back to the fact that the airbags have killed some people, and not knowing why is perhaps not a good reason for telling people just keep driving.
No, but you do something else then, Mark.
Shooting metal shards in your face.
Yeah.
Which is the
First, and I'm not trying to justify this at all. If you look at the failure rate, it's like 6 decimal points out. You know, it's an infinitesimal small failure rate. I'm not justifying it. Something should have been done when they knew that there was a problem here. But, you know, the other thing that you can do, and NHTSA will do this, although no one's talking about it, legally you can have an on-off switch installed. Mm. Just like you guys have been in pickup trucks with the on-off switch so that, you know, if it's a two-door pickup and there's no back seat and you got to put, you know, a child in the front seat, you can turn the airbag off.
Right.
So you can do that for the driver's side bag, too. And if people are truly worried about their airbag, they should just have it turned off and make sure they wear their seatbelt until somebody finds the root cause and replacement parts can be made in enough volume to accommodate all these cars.
You know, I think this comes up with another point that, as you point out, there are three manufacturers that make airbags. And, you know, if we go back just a very few years ago, all of the OEMs were saying, we want to reduce the supply base. And here's a situation where they've reduced the supply base such that it's come to this.
Yeah.
And if there were more manufacturers, there'd be more opportunities. But, you know, and I'm sure that we could find any other system in a vehicle, and it would be the same sort of thing. There's like, well, maybe there's two, maybe there's four. You know what I mean?
If you had more manufacturers, you wouldn't have Takata supplying so many airbags many vehicles.
It's like, you know,
itself wouldn't be as large.
You know, about 8 million vehicles have been recalled as a result of this. And but I mean, it just strikes me that I think the auto industry is getting, you know, bit in the ass for something that they themselves
created.
That's right. They went a little too far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hey, Chip's got a...
Mark
Phelan.
All right. I'm looking forward to hearing from the next viewer as well, though. But my first lump of coal goes to Scion, because as you probably didn't notice, Scion announced at the LA Auto Show that they will be introducing a new compact hatchback called the IM, which will replace the XD, which you probably didn't notice either, and the XD replaced the XA. And Scion has got a really unbroken history of selling compact hatchbacks that nobody cares about. I see nothing that's going to change this now, and I just wonder, why does it keep doing it, and what does Scion mean? What should Scion be? There was such fanfare when this brand was introduced, and it's become kind of a nothing burger.
Well, talk about a brand that's lost its way and lost its customers. I mean, there used to be this great, incredible youth brand experiment with, you know, unusual marketing and non-traditional advertising, and apparently the majority of the buyers now are retirees who are coming in and realizing, well, geez, here's a neat little compact thing that gets great fuel economy, is cheap, doesn't have all kinds of crazy bells and whistles, you know, the speedometer's in the middle, so what? And they're buying these things, and they're not only selling up, they're also selling them as taxi cabs. You go to Chicago, everything's an XB, and it's a great taxi cab. It's roomy in the back, it's efficient, it's reliable, being a Toyota.
There's the kiss of death of the brand.
But exactly, right. what young person wants to go out and buy a taxi?
See, but it's interesting, if you go back to the beginning of Scion, where Jim Farley
launched it, right?
But that they thought the XA was going to be the car.
Yes.
And it turned out to be the XB.
They so completely misunderstood their own products and their own customers.
But it's also interesting if you think about it that you know, Nissan has tried with the boxy thing. It didn't work out so well. But Kia with the Soul has come in, and it's worked very well. So I mean,
them hamsters.
Yeah, could be the hamsters. So you know, it's an interesting phenomenon that it's like they had accidental success. So we all look at them and say, "Wow, you know, they were so prescient." But they weren't, because they didn't even see that coming. Mm-hmm. And the TC's been doing fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And, the
FRS has FRS a little audience.
Been doing fairly well. So maybe that's what they're going to try to do with this new thing. But, I mean, I don't disagree that they need some.
It's just the European Toyota Auris, isn't it? I believe it's not even anything special.
Right. It's special because we don't have
it. It looks like an old Mazda 3 even. It's not even, good luck.
Okay, I agree with Mark. And now we've got
a phone call.
From a viewer. Let's take it.
This is Dave Foley, a.k.a. Miradar, from where the roads are paved with bitumen, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. For 2014, my lump of coal goes to Mercedes-Benz. I'm sorry, but putting a fastback roofline on anything does not give you the right to call it a coupe, especially on an SUV with four doors.
Yes. Amen.
Bravo. Bravo.
Yay.
We're with you all the way.
Preach, brother.
We're with you all the way.
Yeah. The whole idea of the European four-door coupe, God, somebody should have driven a stake through that thing's heart.
We tried.
Immediately.
Everyone tried. Every single automotive publication said this is not a coupe. And then the Germans came back and said, well, if it's shortened, it's a coupe. It means shortened. It's something different. You know, it's not a coupe. That's not a coupe.
That's not.
That's a compact sedan.
So we like it, David. Hey, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more presents and lumps of coal. But first, we've got to give a shout-out to that car company that doesn't build cars.
Introducing a car company that's never made a single car. We took the power of a 9-year-old V8 and gave it the impressive handling of Firestone's Destination tire. Now, moms agree, every milk run feels like a victory lap. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Man, I wish I had a voice like the guy on that commercial. Jeez. Okay, back to the presents and Gary Vasilash.
All right, so I want to give a present to Rick Wild, a.k.a. Chevy Guy. Now, it's almost as though we've forgotten about this guy. I mean, he was famous for, you know, maybe 20 minutes, not just merely 15. So for those of you who don't recall this or what I'm talking about is that, so he was a regional Chevy guy who gave a Chevy Colorado to the San Francisco pitcher, Madison Bumgarner, that's an unfortunate name, and I discovered today that his nickname, I'm not making this up, is Mad Bum.
But, why wouldn't it be? I mean,
so he's a pitcher. He won the MVP, and so Rick Wild came out there. He seemed rather flummoxed by the whole opportunity being in front of the world and everyone else, and started talking about how the vehicle had all kinds of good technology and stuff. And so technology and stuff just became all the rage for about 21 minutes. And so just lasted a little bit longer than Rick Wild. So I got to give this guy credit because, I mean, he deserves props for going out there, for doing that, and for giving us all a little bit of amusement. For
and kudos to Chevy for running with it. I mean, they picked up on it immediately and said, you know what, we're going to make this guy a hero instead of the villain.
And that's it. It's one of the rare cases of the internet having a heart.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this guy.
But it didn't start out.
No.
At first it was like, who is this idiot? Who is this goat?
You know, blah, blah, blah.
And then it started to change. Like, hey, you can't make fun of that
He's
guy.
Just a normal guy. His team just lost. Go Chevy guy. Yep. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought it was brilliant to embrace the technology and stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In fact, they even hashtagged that technology and stuff.
Yeah, the full page ads that Chevy was running with that. So
it was on their actual Chevrolet website that you went to the next morning, where the Colorado hashtag was right there.
But how soon we forget, so he gets
it. Yeah.
John,
good choice.
Who are you going to give a present to?
You know, I thought it was very significant, this first ever 3D printed car.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that they showed at the Machine Tool Show in Chicago at first.
And Manufacturing Technology Show, John.
That's right. Yeah, I'm showing my roots, right?
That's
go way back.
Yeah.
But, and now it's making its rounds. I think it's even going to be at the Detroit Auto Show.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And look, this is significant. You know, I think when we lay out the timeline of going from you know, Model T's being made of wood to of ultimately, you know, the first all steel car, you know, the first hard top and so on down the line. This has got to be in there. You know, the first 3D printed car. It's historic.
It's not it's not even unattractive. I mean, it looks good, too. It's stylish.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Well, I was at Oak Ridge National Labs last summer when they were working with Local Motors on this. Because Oak Ridge National Labs has got all kinds of crazy 3D printing stuff. They're printing, you know, prosthetic limbs for injured veterans and stuff.
Limbs and stuff.
The things that they are doing and the things that it is possible to do in terms of manufacturing are mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is just the beginning. So, yeah, Local Motors and their 3D printed and whoever else helped them in it, I give them a present. And Mark, it's your turn.
Ah, well, I will give a present to Ram Trucks because their EcoDiesel set a fuel economy standard that was so high that when it came out in March, Ford spent the next 6 months trying to convince people that the F-150 didn't have to have the best pickup fuel economy of any pickup in order to be a success. I mean, the Ram has been on a real growth roll anyway, and the EcoDiesel was just a signal achievement.
And Gary and I, as we were talking about earlier, were just with the Ram people, and they announced they're doubling production of that engine.
No.
Wow.
It's going to be 19% of the mix, and so, yeah.
And probably 40% of the profit mix in that case.
That's right. Not cheap. Not a cheap motor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, Aaron.
Well, unlike our caller, I'm having a present to Mercedes-Benz because...
It's the second one they're getting.
Is it? Yeah.
No.
You plead guilty. You gave him one for the buyback.
I gave him one. You're giving him one?
Yes, I am.
And Christian Bokic ought to be very happy about this show.
I'm giving it to them for one of the best cars I've driven this year, the Mercedes AMG GT Coupe, which I thought was a fantastic vehicle. It's one of the first real competitors to the 911, I think. And it's the thing is, it doesn't go head-to-head necessarily with the Porsche 911. It's a little bit off to one side. I mean, it's the same kind of buyer. It's the buyer who goes to the Porsche dealership to buy the 911 not because of what the 911 can do, but because of what badge is on it and because all of his buddies have a 911 too. Now he's got another option, or she, can go to the Mercedes-Benz dealer, find something that's actually a lot nicer inside, that's actually much more attractive on the outside, can still, if you turn a couple of knobs, blow things away at any kind of track day you might happen to take it to. And now at the country club, when you pull up and there's a whole line of Porsche 911s, your AMG GT is going to be there on the end looking fly, and I think that is absolutely worth the money. Fantastic car. Gorgeous car.
Great choice. Mm. Great choice. And
I'll have my Tesla there. But.
Yeah. And Chip's got another on-camera presentation from a good friend of ours, Robert Albinder, who is from Katz's Deli. He runs Katz's in New York.
To look at me, you wouldn't know, but I love Katz's Deli. Yeah.
So, Chip, let's hear that.
Robert Albinder, our Katz's Deli connection from New York City, offers a present to Dodge Chief Tim Kaniskis for lowering the price of the current Viper by $15,000, as well as offering owners of the current Gen 5 Viper a certificate for the same amount that they can apply toward the purchase of the new, less expensive 2015 Viper.
Does Robert have a Viper?
Yes, he does.
I think he does.
Remember when we had Ralph Gilles here? He sent Ralph that nice present
and
was talking about, and Ralph had mentioned that when he was in New York and he met with Robert and spent some time together I think that Kaniskis has done a really phenomenal job in terms of positioning Dodge as a no apologies, hard ass, you know, this is American performance and we're going right down that street and we don't care whether you like it or not. And it's working well in terms of sales. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, we keep talking about this thing in Austin. We're getting a lot of mileage out of that.
But, that's right.
But I mean, to see that I think that the guys at Chrysler now realize that you know, there's a lot of momentum with Dodge and not so much with Chrysler. And Chrysler's got to start, you know, picking it up. So, you know, full marks to Dodge guys.
What was their alternative? Their alternative basically is can the Dodge brand. I mean, this almost smacks as like, you know what? Last ditch effort. Let's see what we can make stick and try this really gung-ho American rah-rah thing. But it's going to work because it's already very popular with a lot of people for whom are buying these vehicles because of their performance chops.
Right.
And they're talking about the Challenger and the Charger, and it's interesting because they're cross-shopped against each other. The Challenger's number one cross-shop vehicle is the Charger and vice versa, mm-hmm. and it's all among youth. It's all among young people are right. buying Charger more than ever before. So I agree. Dropping the price on the Viper, they had to do something.
They had to. It was dead. It was dead in the water, right.
Where's the convertible?
Yeah.
I mean, we're now 2-3 years on with this Viper, and we still haven't seen a convertible.
Well, you know, maybe if it had sold the way they expected out of the blocks, we'd have the convertible. But why add a whole bunch more expense into a program when you can't even sell what you've got?
I figure they would have designed it that way from the beginning, though, mm-hmm. I imagine.
And if it had come out when gas prices were going.
Okay, on to round four.
John, who are you going to give a coal to, a chunk of coal?
I'm giving a lump of coal to Lexus, because if you guys maybe... There's the coal. All right. Gift wrapped, no less. And they started running these anti-diesel ads. Yeah. And I thought, wow, is that the way to sell hybrids, by attacking diesels? Apparently, Lexus is concerned. And I think they've got good reason to be, because I looked up some numbers before I chose them for this lump of coal and found out that this year their hybrid sales have dropped about 2%. In a very hot market, and especially on the luxury side. Meanwhile, BMW's diesels sales are up 165%. One more, and they're still way behind where Lexus is in hybrids. One more year like this, though, and BMW is going to be selling more diesels in America than mm-hmm. Lexus sells hybrids. Fine. So I think it was stupid of them to go spend their hard-earned advertising money attacking an engine they don't even offer. Boneheaded. Mm. Ergo, coal.
And they do the same thing in Europe, actually, where diesels are hugely popular. They've frequently positioned their hybrid as an alternative to diesels there, too. Go figure.
Not so popular in the city hall in Paris, though. I guess.
Okay, Mark, you're up.
Point that out. Well, and speaking of BMW, I have a literal lump of coal for BMW. After they spent untold man hours developing and hundreds of millions of dollars coming up with carbon fiber bodies and power plants and a whole brand built around the idea of electric vehicles, gas prices just hit the basement and keep going down. I mean, BMW, you are just... Nobody. I can't remember the last time somebody was so obviously at the wrong time with a bunch of products. You know, what do you do if you're BMW with the I brand now?
Boy, I don't know. The other thing, too, is, I think the i3 is an awesome car. I think it's a game changer in certain respects. But, you know, it's only got a little bit more range than a Leaf. You know, and it's like, what's all this carbon fiber? You know, it's the same thing we were talking about with Ford and the aluminum. That, yes, it's very significant. You got to admire the engineering effort. You really do. But did it move the needle that much in fuel economy for the F-150 or for range with the i3? And it didn't.
And the range-extending engine that they have on it is almost useless, quite frankly.
I mean, 1 gallon tank?
One and a half gallons, it gets you 60 miles. So
it's pricey.
Pricey. And the thing is, you can't go, like on like a Volt, where you can just get in the thing and drive as long as you need to. This range-extended hybrid can't even get you to Chicago without you stopping every two exits on the highway in order to fill up the little tank.
Okay, you're up, Aaron.
Well, my lump of coal, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of people that are going to agree with me on this one, goes to the new Cadillac chief, Johan Dennichsen, who came over from Infiniti, where he left to come from Audi. For specifically not moving things to New York City, because frankly, if you're going to move some branding stuff to New York City, all right, great. That's where a lot of young, hip people are living right now. Go find yourself in New York City. Come home when you've learned who you are. But for the naming convention that we have seen coming for Cadillac, the new flagship, which is now maybe not going to be the flagship, because there's a CT8 and CT whatever coming after that, will be called CT6. What the hell is a CT? CT Coupe?
CAT scan.
CAT scan, something like that? And then all the SUVs are going to be XT. So you'll have CTs and XTs and then a number after it. The idea being that for a global luxury brand, you have to have an alphanumeric because you cannot have names from one place to another. I think that's crap. I think it's absolutely not the case that you have to have an alphanumeric in order to have international appeal. Hyundai doesn't have a problem selling named vehicles all over the world without a problem. There's even there's a luxury, but Maserati doesn't have an issue doing that kind of stuff. Nobody can get passionate about a number.
Doesn't Hyundai have the i10 in
most of their vehicles in Europe have actually letters and numbers.
But your Maserati example is spot on.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you have nobody can get, I'm all flustered over this. Well, nobody gets passionate about a number, except maybe M3. But it has this whole alphanumeric naming convention has not worked for any company that's tried it except Audi.
And BMW and Mercedes.
They started with it.
Right.
They didn't switch to it.
But it's funny, though. I'm going to take the exact opposite.
Real.
And go after Denishin. I think the names needed to be changed. Not that the new ones are necessarily great, but there was no consistent logical platform on which to build with the old system. There's an ATS, a CTS, an XTS.
Right.
You needed something where you could see a continuum. Come up with something with a continuum. So the change in the names, I'm fine with that. The whole idea of every place but New York sucks and is full of rubes is just so pathetically untrue and insulting to your readers and insulting to the people who make and design your cars. I'm really tired of that. They come off, you know, like people who just got off the bus at Grand Central at the Port Authority, and they'll be lucky if they still have their wallet when they go a block.
See, the more interesting thing,
Mark,
is that a lot of
not works for the Detroit Free Press. I just want to make that very clear at this point.
But a lot of the trendy and interesting people that are in New York are actually now coming here to Detroit because they realize it's just as gritty and
I think many of the
Brooklyn,
trendy,
but much more affordable.
People, trendy, interesting people in New York don't drive.
That too.
I mean, it's just like they're in something that's either yellow or large and black, and they're generally in the back seat.
Okay, Gary, you're up. Lump of coal.
Okay, so I'm going to give my lump of coal. I spent 3 hours on Sunday, then I'm not going to get back in my life. I went and saw Interstellar starring Matthew McConaughey.
You should have called me, man. I could have told you. Save your money.
All right, so, you know, I was thinking about Matthew McConaughey, okay? And so many of us remember a few weeks back when it was announced that the Led Zeppelin reunion would not happen because Robert Plant turned down a reported $300 million for his portion of this thing. You know, he decided not to take the money. But for whatever reason, Academy Award-winning actor Matthew McConaughey took money from Lincoln to make a series of commercials for the MKC. Now, I am mystified how this enhances the career of Mr. McConaughey or how it enhances the MKC. Now, I know John is going to disagree with me on this one. So I, too, looked at some numbers. Now, Interstellar, by the way, made $100 million so far in the United States, and it has made $600 million worldwide. So we're not right on that one. But okay. So I started looking to see, okay, Lincoln sales are up 20.6% in November, okay, over last year. Okay, so it's sold 8,113 vehicles in the month of November. Okay, now the Cadillac, we just got off of Cadillac, this is very timely. So Cadillac sales were down 18.7%, okay? So here we have Lincoln up 21%, Cadillac down 19%, yet it sold 13,148 units, or 5,035 more units than Lincoln. So we're seeing the magic that Mr. McConaughey's ads have had. Now, okay, so Lincoln MKC, sales are up. Well, it can't be up because they didn't have one last year, but they sold 2,152 MKCs, right?
Where are you going with this, Gary?
Okay. Outsold them with the long in the tooth SRX. So all of this is to say that I don't understand why McConaughey made those ads, okay?
I don't care why he did it. I just love the spoofs that have resulted from it. I mean, you were talking earlier.
A lot of priceless advertising in itself.
Oh, absolutely. The Ellen one was fun, but the Saturday Night Live one with Jim Carrey was absolutely hysteric. What's the funniest stuff that I've seen on SNL since 1992?
Best thing he's done since he was a pet detective.
That too, yeah. All right.
Okay, lump of coal for Matthew McConaughey, and we've got another viewer.
Hi, this is Curtis Easter calling from Orlando, Florida. My lump of coal goes to NBC Sports for its poor racing coverage. NBC, you have a jewel in your coverage worth polishing.
Amen. I'm with Curtis. In fact, Boy, I think most of the motor racing coverage is pretty bad. Pretty bad. The Formula One stuff, not so bad. I like David Hobbs and, you know, Steve Madden.
But if you look at what Sky does with the European broadcasts, which you can, with a little bit of tweaking, get online, there's so much more information.
Oh, yeah.
So much better.
Yeah, but I'm with him. I think motor racing coverage is one of the reasons why motor racing viewership is down. Mm. Okay, we'll try to pick it up a little bit because we got a couple of other viewers that we want to get their input on. And round five, Mark, presents.
Absolutely. And my present is to the reason that Lincoln is up and Cadillac was down last month, compact SUVs. This is a segment smaller than the SRX, smaller than the Equinox, about the size of the MKC, and even smaller than that, the Buick Encore. These compact and subcompact SUVs going to have a huge year. Chevy Trax, Honda HR-V, Lexus NX, Mercedes GLA. These are some of the most interesting, best-looking new cars hitting the market right now, and they're going to be very popular.
And the 500X we had in the studio here last week on
the
show.
Jeep Renegade. Yes. I mean, there's tons of them. It's going to almost a dozen of them are coming next year.
Yeah, the Mazda CX-3, which is being shown right now on screen.
It's a hot set.
That's one of my favorites so far. Yep. I can't wait to drive that.
Yeah, I agree. That Mazda looks good.
That interior.
Okay, Aaron, you're up.
Well, my present is actually going to Chrysler or Fiat Chrysler Automobili at the moment for actually producing the Hellcat engines. Who would have thought just a few years ago that we're going to see a 707 horsepower engine from anybody, much less actually coming from one of our own quote-unquote sort of domestic sort of automakers, and being put into a family sedan? I mean, a coupe like the Challenger, I understand that, but a four-door like the Charger and making it
and off the showroom floor, 204 miles an hour.
Yeah, and under 3 seconds to 60. I mean, that's just unbelievable numbers. People keep saying, you know, we're living in the heyday of the muscle car, and we really are.
We are. This is the golden age.
And it's not an unaffordable vehicle for a lot of people. It's not a $100,000, $150,000 exotic. It's something that if you really scrounge together some money, or maybe the kids don't have to go to college immediately, you could get this and enjoy this.
I'm stunned at the engineering that they did on this engine.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have seen all the stats. The other thing is, we know it's more than 707.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they're keeping a little bit in reserve and just waiting for whoever is going to attack them. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, here's what we got now.
The Hellcat S or something like that. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a good one. Gary.
As Curtis was talking about NBC sports coverage of racing, fortunately, NBC wasn't doing NASCAR. So I want to give a...
But they will be this year.
Well, let's hope that things turn out better. So I want to give a present to Jeff Gordon, okay? Jeff Gordon is the old guy of NASCAR, yet Jeff Gordon was in the chase. He was in the last series of races. He unfortunately ended up finishing sixth overall. But at 43 years old, here's this guy who's still showing his stuff. I mean, he doesn't need to do anything. I mean, he's won several championships, and yet he was in there racing. So for those of us who are aging, I want to give him a present. Now, I did check to see Kevin Harvick won the Cup, 39. So again, these young guns they keep talking about, well, they got something to learn from these older guys. So
they do. Good one. So I'm up next, and I'm giving a present to the Google Bubble Car. You know, this little fully autonomous vehicle that they've developed, still very much a concept, kind of goofy looking in a way.
Kind of?
But again, I think when we look back in automotive history, we're going to go, wow, this is one of the things that really started to push autonomy into the mainstream. And I think Google's way out in front of everybody on this technology.
And they're even promising to give some of it away, aren't they? They were talking about partnerships with automakers and just giving away a lot of this technology, I thought.
I got the chance to interview the number two guy in the program there 2 months ago. And and I asked him, are you going to sell this technology to automakers? Or are you guys going to use it yourselves? And he says, that hasn't been determined.
Oh, I've realized, we could actually monetize this.
Yeah, they could. They could. But we'll see what happens.
Elon Musk giving away their patents.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I think we've got another viewer choice here. Chuck Grency.
Autoline viewer Pedro Fernandez from Miami, Florida, gives his 2014 present to the overall group of automakers and engineers for what he calls the real practicality of autonomous cars.
Well, we'll get to Chuck's in a minute there. We didn't realize that. And but it was a nice tie-in with autonomy.
Yeah. Right.
So very good, Pedro. We like that.
Mm-hmm. I actually had the chance to sample the Cadillac Super Cruise. I think it was last summer, where they had a little demonstration program in an SRX out at Milford Proving Grounds. It's neat. Mm-hmm. I actually can't wait for that kind of stuff to actually start showing up.
So it's your turn for some coal.
My turn for some coal. Well, unlike everybody who's a big fan of the F-150 and everything that it portends, I'm giving a lump of coal to Ford for the F-150 for producing a very impressive pickup truck that really didn't move the needle as much as I think a lot of us thought it was going to move it. Great that they'd spent a lot of money making an aluminum pickup truck, and that is an extraordinary thing that they have done. But as we've said before, the Ram EcoDiesel still has best-in-class status. And as we said, a lot of people who are going to go to the dealership, buy an F-150, it's not that going to be that much big of a difference. It's still a great, big, enormous pickup truck. It's extremely comfortable. It's got a lot of really cool technology in it. It's still going to be pretty expensive. It's not all that different from anything that they've produced before. It's just a little bit better, which is fine. But putting that much investment into it, I expected something a bit more.
Yeah. No, I think that's a real legitimate complaint, you know, how much cost they put into it. I think it's a terrific truck, but, boy, it was expensive to go that route.
Yeah, but, and it may prove out for them in the future, especially if and when they put a diesel in the thing. Suddenly they've got a lighter pickup than the Ram that now has
That would be 30 mpg, maybe.
One would expect to be more, potentially. But we'd all kind of thought maybe they're going to get 30 mpg and beat the Ram EcoDiesel and... Didn't happen.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, Gary, you get a lump.
So this sort of goes with what you're talking about, the Google car, and this coal goes to the Department of Motor Vehicles of the state of California, which have a requirement that the Google car actually have a steering wheel and a brake pedal. I mean, these guys are standing in the way of the brave new world.
I mean, it's just
regulation. Now, this is sort of the interesting part, which goes back to this discussion about what Google's going to do with this technology. So if for those of you who are engineers out there who are watching, you might want to go to the Google website, because they are hiring a systems test engineer. It's described as you will help revolutionize the safety and efficiency of personal mobility as part of a world-class team developing self-driving cars. You will rigorously stress our products in simulation in real life so they can meet Google standards of quality, safety, and reliability in our customers' hands. Working closely with design engineers, you will give input on designs to improve our systems. So here is Google advertising. Go work in Mountain View and work on cars as a test engineer.
It sounds like you're going to be a human test dummy.
Well, that may happen too.
And I'm sorry, but rigorously simulating.
And this is a very we all think of Google as a search engine company, right? According to Google, Google is and always will be an engineering company. So, California Department of Motor Vehicles, take out that steering wheel and brake pedal. Let those systems test engineers just test their asses off.
Okay, my turn for a lump of coal, and I'm giving it to the whole hybrid segment. And it's not that I'm down on hybrids or have any problem with them, but, man, that segment is just crashing. And that's before this started last year, before gasoline prices in the U.S. really started to go down. And, I don't know what's going to happen now with, I heard even here in Michigan, you can buy gas at under $2 a gallon.
Out in Ann Arbor it is, yep.
And what the heck is that going to do to the hybrid segment? So I give a lump of coal to the segment. Not that I'm trashing the cars. I think they're just fine, but it ain't working. And Mark, you're up.
And I got a lump of coal for a vehicle that I will trash. The Honda Ridgeline. Honda apparently is just throwing good money after bad, developing a new version of the Ridgeline pickup. We've seen silhouette images of the new pickup, and the big news is that it is going to look slightly less weird and more like a pickup if viewed from the side.
Yeah.
And at this point, I mean, Honda barely sells any of them. There is a new Ridgeline coming with it before the end of next year, we think. But who's going to notice? Who's going to care?
I'll notice, because I actually like the Ridgeline a whole lot.
But I like the idea of the
Ridgeline. That makes me and who else? You're right. It's not selling at all.
I drove one not actually all that long ago, and I liked the idea of the Ridgeline, but the execution was obviously very ancient. I mean, it felt like driving a 10-year-old truck, because it was.
Okay, now we're going to Chuck Grency. Let's roll that.
We're back again with Chuck Grency, from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, who this time sends a big old lump of coal to the United States Congress for complaining about our crumbling transportation infrastructure, but not having the backbone to raise the federal gas tax and earmark that money for fixing our roads and bridges.
Yet. Thanks for that, Chuck. So we're going to really try to pick up the pace here. And I see I had already picked Hellcats for my present, so we're going to skip me. But Gary, you're up.
All right. I want to give a present to Alan Mulally. Once again, he's gone from Ford. He resigned on July 1st of this year. I think that he put in place a lot of the vehicles that will be very successful, Aaron, notwithstanding. interestingly enough, that he resigned from Ford on the 1st of July, and on the 9th of July, he joined the board of Google.
Yeah.
So there he is 8 days later at Google. So sort of all thematic here. Didn't pick on Tesla this show, but somehow Google.
Good deal. Okay, Mark?
I've got presents for Acura and Lincoln, a couple of luxury brands that have been slumping into complete irrelevance over the last few years. This year, each of them introduced a new vehicle that was good enough to make the brands matter again. The Lincoln MKC, the Acura TLX. These are a couple of vehicles to watch. Maybe the brands are, too.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. I like both those cars. Aaron?
My present goes to General Motors for the new Canyon and Colorado midsize pickups. I am very impressed with them. And I actually think it's even more of a gamble for GM to have introduced these than for Ford to have gone aluminum on the F-150.
Oh, good point.
Because it's not a global vehicle. This is a very unique truck for North America. It's not the global truck that they're selling overseas. It has a significantly re-engineered chassis, and it has some very unique systems for North America. So it's a pretty big investment for them. It's also got a dedicated plant as well. But it's reopening a segment that a lot of us in the pickup field think is underserved and has been underserved for quite some time.
Cool. Hey, we've got another viewer, Dave Foley. Let's bring his presence in.
This is Dave Foley, a.k.a. Miradart from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. For 2014, my present goes to Nissan Canada. With their Back in the Game program, Nissan Canada helps finance 21 deserving high school football programs across Canada. Many of these were inner-city schools that really needed the hand up. With direct cash infusions, they were able to purchase the needed supplies, equipment, and uniforms to get them back in the game. To see the results, check out Nissan Canada's YouTube page.
Nice.
Or as we say in America, Nissan.
Yeah. Right. Let's jump into coal. I guess I'm up first in this one. I'm giving a lump of coal to Uber. I think Uber is a very interesting company. I think they're a game changer. But they're come off as a bunch of pricks. You know,
lately.
Yeah. It's
especially with the whole, did you hear about the whole Sydney terrorism thing that they'd had going on?
Yeah, the surge pricing.
The surge pricing.
And now they're trying to make nice.
Oh, no, we didn't really do that in purchase.
I know. So, I mean, look, they got a great a great technology. They just got to learn some manners and how to get into a market.
And they got a great valuation, too.
Mm. Yeah.
$41 billion. Go figure.
Okay, Mark, another lump of coal?
Cadillac. How does an American brand fall this far behind in SUVs? I mean, SUVs are the reason every other luxury brand sales were up last year. They're most of the reason Cadillacs were down, because other luxury brands are introducing vehicles like the Audi Q3, the BMW X1. Cadillac has the Escalade, which is a good vehicle in its own right, and they've got the SRX, which is way too old. They got nothing in the growth segment. The growth is SUVs. Get on a Cadillac.
Great point.
They're spending their time renaming.
Okay. Yes. Aaron, because we're moving along, another lump.
Lexus. Every succeeding Lexus that I have seen over the last 2-3 years now has been uglier than the one that has preceded it. Most recently, the RC Coupe that I had not long ago. Absolutely hideous. I mean, it's one of these polarizing vehicles that I understand. Not everybody's going to like this. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. I think it's absolutely hideous, and it all comes down to that grill, that enormous gaping predator face grill that just looks awful.
I don't agree. And, you know, it's bold. It's outrageous. You know, so they've gone from total milquetoast to, you know, big hairy chested roaring lion kind of approach. And their sales are up.
That's what I don't understand. I guess I'm just alone in this. You know?
I agree with John.
It's working.
I love the RC. I think it's the best looking car this year.
It's hideous. You look at it. I don't know if we had a picture of the thing on the screen, but I don't want to look at the screen to see if it was up
there.
It's
on the screen. We'd be mesmerized.
Ugh.
All right. Okay. The last one. Sergio Marchionne. Okay. And the reason is, okay, they've taken the Pentastar down from Auburn Hills. I think that's just, you know, it just tugs at our hearts here in Detroit. And then Tuesday we learned that the Chrysler name has gone away, right? I mean, it's
no longer Chrysler Group.
No longer Chrysler Group. And it'll be, and this gets back to the point of the nomenclature, it will be known as FCAUSLLC. And I find it very ironic that we're seeing those ads that they're running on television about how romantic the Dodge brothers were. You know, the two boys are doing all these wacky things. And, you know, how romantic is a name like FCAUSLLC?
Yeah, but only we even see that. So it's a limited market problem.
Okay, we give the last presentation, lump of coal, to Robert Allbinder again. Let's run that.
And now back to Robert Allbinder from New York City, who sends a piece of coal this time to print media moguls for the continuing and systematic disappearance of auto enthusiast magazines.
Okay, actually, we have one more to add to that because we got to give, you know, credit to our viewers who took the time to write these things, and
we had to give all of our viewers a present for watching this thing.
For watching, yeah, putting up with us. Okay, we've got Curtis Easter. Let's go to his present.
This is Curtis Easter from Orlando, Florida, and I have a present for Subaru for its improved product and steady increase in sales.
Yeah, you can't argue with Subaru.
It's working.
I mean, I don't understand it. I watch it happen, and I don't understand it.
John, it's love.
It's love.
Oh, God, I hate those commercials. But I just drove the new Legacy, and I loved it. I mean,
see?
It was a great value and a really good car. Yeah.
But if you parked it in a parking lot full of the brand-new Hyundai Sonatas, I defy you to find it.
Yeah. Very anonymous.
It looks exactly like it.
Nonetheless, I'm really impressed by Subaru. Mm. They're awesome. But look, we got to wrap this up. So Aaron Bragman from Cars.com, Mark Phelan, Detroit Free Press, great having the both of you guys on the show.
Thank you, John.
Happy holidays.
And Gary, let's do this show again, but let's take a couple of weeks off. Let's go have some Christmas and New Year's and holiday cheer, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
That's right. Okay. So good happy deal. Holidays to you guys. Thanks for being on the show.
And, Thank you. Always
everybody
a pleasure.
Everybody for watching.
Now I'm going to go get Robert Allbinder to give me a pastrami sandwich.
You got it.
Man.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.